Hey, hey, I'm your host, the Dr. Danko, come on in. You've been missing out, so let's begin. Oh, Pumpkin underscore Crumb is your host here too. When you hear the beat, you know what to do. Why didn't you warn me? Why didn't you warn me now? Why didn't you warn me? Why didn't you warn me? Hey.
All right, so we weren't really going to talk about it because we weren't that far into it, but we've restarted watching The Flash.
Yeah, so we are fully a season behind where everyone else is.
Because
no spoilers.
It's on Netflix now, and I did get a little bit of it spoiled for me just because I follow Kevin Smith, and since he works on the show, it was bound to happen.
Okay, well, don't spoil it for me.
I'm not gonna.
Okay. But so far, I mean, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, I am not a huge fan of DC. But
no, you've never really made that apparent to anyone.
But The Flash has been pretty consistently delightful. Like, it started out kind of slow, but it picked up.
Yeah, and I would like to go back and rewatch the initial series to see how slow it actually was.
The initial season.
Yeah.
We're in America.
Sorry. Yeah, and in Britain, that's what we call them.
Right. Slow might have been a bad word.
I mean, it probably, like, from our perspective watching it the first time, it, not knowing what it was or what it thought it was.
The thing that bothered me about season one that has not bothered me since is that everything was so serious and was so heavy and everything was such a big deal. It was like if Angel and Buffy were the only
All
things
right.
happening.
That's a little far-fetched.
Everything was so
From
dramatic.
What I remember, I think the first episode was pretty rough in terms of, like, it was dramatic, but, like, the dude,
I get that he had to watch his mother die.
Yeah.
But, like, whatever.
All right.
DC characters and their dead parents, and it just,
all right.
I understand that it was rough, that it would be rough for a child.
Yes, okay, but that's what I'm saying, is I'd like to go back and rewatch it to see if it's actually
okay.
like that, or if it was just the first episode, because from what I remember, because I watched it live, it was pretty fun, and it was like a villain of the week type thing, which is what it is now.
But it wasn't just the first episode, it was the first season, because
but
it was
I don't
because
it was the whole season.
He and Iris, any time they interacted with each other, I wanted to slit both of their throats, and like,
and Buffy and Angel are just fine?
No, they're super dramatic and overwhelming.
Yeah, but did you feel that way watching it the first time?
I was young when I watched it the first time. I don't know.
All right.
It's heavy and dramatic and annoying.
Yeah.
But it's also not the entire thing.
Well,
Buffy's quippy and funny. And, like, for a while, it was only when Cisco was there that I was like, this show is worth continuing to watch. And then, like, everybody lightened up a little bit and it got a little bit more fun. And, I mean, the other thing is that, like, the thing that's been fun about The Flash from the beginning is that a lot of the villains are just, like, the ridiculous scrapings of, like, the bottom of the DC bag of tricks. Like,
maybe
King Shark.
Okay. I don't think he's that low on the list, considering he did get an action figure relatively recently. But, like, I mean, there are way deeper canon characters that are stupid, like Condiment King.
All right, could be dumber, you're right.
Yeah. But
I can see he
but, like, I think it works in that universe.
It absolutely does.
Like,
yeah,
with how cheesy they are. I mean, and Cisco being the one to name them makes it better because
it's perfect.
It gives it a plausible reason why they have goofy names.
Right.
Whereas, like, back in the day, they were just like, well, this dude can stretch to unbelievable strengths. He's like, I don't know, rubber or plastic. Ah, Plastic Man.
Right.
That's what we're going to call him.
Done.
Yeah, so, like, yeah, it definitely works in the universe.
Yeah, and like I did, like I said, I grew to really, really love and enjoy the Flash series because it's fun. Like,
yeah, it definitely keeps you entertained and you want to keep coming back for more. And then there's some drama thrown in there. I mean, but much like the comic book page, like, these television shows should be a bit soap opera-y because comic books are soap opera-y.
Right, it's, It's very much like heightened reality.
Yeah, yeah.
So everything is, like, the colors are just a little bit brighter.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And they're designed that way for that purpose, because it should feel like a comic book.
And the Flash is the only DC thing that I have taken in, which admittedly is not everything. In, like, this current era of DC things, that has felt like that fun, snappy comic book kind of feeling.
Right. And, you know, because the argument comes up all the time, so, like, Marvel versus DC. So, the Marvel shows that exist out there exist solely, really, on Netflix.
Right.
There are a few with, like, X-Men and things like that that they're doing, and the Marvel Runaways, which I haven't watched, but... So, Marvel decided to do the opposite, because their movies are light and fun. They were going to make their series dark and gritty because, well, of the content, like the characters in those series, like Daredevil and The Punisher and things like that.
Jessica Jones.
Yeah, Jessica Jones. Peggy Carter, I don't think was very dark. I mean, it's old-timey.
That one just was another one that didn't really know what it was.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because Hayley Atwell was fantastic. And Peggy Carter, like, she founded S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, that would have been a really cool character to explore.
So, like, the DC shows, I mean, admittedly, they did start with Arrow.
Right. Which is a knockoff Batman.
It is a knockoff Batman. But that show is an example of why I have a problem with their movies. And we talked about this a little bit, in length, but that the DC movies aren't technically comic book movies.
Yeah.
They are, because DC, unlike Marvel, does not run their own movie studio. It's Warner Brothers that runs the movies, and DC is like an extension of that. So you're having a big movie studio do your comic book movies. So what they're there to make money, which is why they pull big names like Superman and Batman every year. Right. But they just want to make movies, not comic book movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so the DC movies that exist aren't good superhero movies, because they're like crime action dramas with people that wear capes.
The fact that they're not great crime action dramas is a different problem entirely. But yeah, I think that the problem that I was having for a really long time in having this conversation is that it wasn't clicking for me that, yeah, DC is not making comic book movies.
Right, and when you look at Marvel, why they're so successful is because they threw that idea out the window.
They created the form of the comic book.
They created the genre.
Right.
Superhero movies.
Because superheroes sort of got lumped in with action before Marvel started taking off.
Yeah.
And you'd think, like, it makes sense, like, off the top of your head to be like, yeah, of course, DC and Marvel, they're both comic books, so of course, Batman movies, we should be able to compare them to Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right.
But they're like, in an ideal world, things. They shouldn't be. But whatever. Yeah, because we were having this conversation the other day. Batman stops making sense if you take him out of comic book Gotham.
Right, which was always your argument of why Gotham City and Batman both suck. Is that, like, Bruce Wayne should take his money and fix the...
And he
what
should.
What was the phrase
you always... Should fix the infrastructure.
The infrastructure, but there was another word attached to it. Like, the systemic...
Systemic disenfranchisement.
Yeah.
Don't laugh at me.
It's funny because you're like, motherfucker, this is a comic book about this dude that, like, broods on gargoyles on top of buildings and, like, can do all this fanciful shit.
But the only Batman that I've been exposed to is the Nolan Batman.
And that's the problem.
Gotham in Nolan's Batman movies looks like a normal city.
Yeah.
It's not... What I've been given to understand in the comic books is just an eternally twilight hellscape where nothing makes sense.
Yes.
So it's possible that in his given context, Batman makes sense.
He does.
But doesn't mean that I am ever gonna like him.
You don't have to like him, you just have to know the difference.
And, like, the fact that he and Iron Man are very similar characters, but Iron Man's so funny and Batman sucks.
But okay, that's not you were good, you were doing like the fact thing, but then it went over to an opinion.
Don't patronize me.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying, so, like, yes, Tony Stark and Batman, Bruce Wayne are
superficially
similar. they do have a lot of similar traits.
Genius,
in the
billionaire,
comic
playboy,
books.
Philanthropist.
Yeah, yeah. And what changes the game is Marvel making Iron Man in 2008.
Right.
With Robert Downey Jr. I mean, granted, if somebody else had been cast, maybe we'd be saying this about them, but he is perfect.
It's possible that
for Tony
Marvel
Stark.
Never would have taken off the way it did.
And the only reason, and I will defend that, like, I will always say this fact, but the guy who plays Happy Hogan, Jon Favreau, who directed Iron Man 1, is the reason Robert Downey Jr. is Tony Stark. Okay. He was fighting for him, they wanted somebody else, but he's like, nope, this is Tony Stark right here.
And he was right.
He was right, and I'm sure Marvel has been like, just
like, bravo.
Super lucky.
Right.
Like. But anyway, so when Marvel made Iron Man, this was off the heels of the Dark Knight trilogy, or the Dark Knight, the middle movie with Heath Ledger, came out in 2009.
Okay.
After it, but Batman Begins sets up this world of Gotham City being like any other. You know, New York City, Chicago,
right, and
whatever.
That's where Batman falls apart because he doesn't function in reality.
Right, and Christopher Nolan's whole thing was like, we're going to make this as realistic as possible. However, like, even putting science into it, like, the way Batman's cape works is like, it's this electromagnetic memory foam.
He's making cape motions with his hands now.
Yes, because I'm trying to think of the words. But it's like this memory foam fabric that when once an electric pulse is introduced to it, it takes the shape of whatever it was programmed to do. And if you program it to be like a cape, it makes for gliding easier and things like that. So they add these scientific elements to it, like, well, this could happen if we had this technology. And like, if you have the super smart man, Morgan Freeman, make your shit, this is what it would look like, and set it all in reality without, like, wavering from that template. Like, even the Joker, this dude that dresses up like a clown, was, like...
It's gritty.
Gritty, yeah. And, like, something went wrong in his head, and he's just fucking everything up, and... I don't know, they made every aspect of it as real as possible. And, like I was saying, that's where Batman does fall apart, because even people that... for whatever reason, do identify with Batman because he is human. Like, he's not somebody that was bitten by a radioactive spider or things like that. They're like, if I had enough money and if I was smart enough and if I did all this training, then I could be Batman. Like, people love to subscribe to that thought.
Right.
But that's not possible.
One of the really funny things that John Green said, somebody, like, asked a question of, like, I haven't seen any Batman movies, should I?
Yeah.
And John Green was like, well, I hate Batman. I kind of enjoyed the Christopher Nolan Batman movies, but I think that the people who made those movies hate Batman.
And
which is so true.
Yeah.
Because all of the things that I dislike about Batman came from that formula for the character, which, and we were talking about this the other day. The other really interesting separation between DC and Marvel is that Marvel is largely set in our world. So there's the idea, like, obviously Spider-Man's New York is, like, it feels a little different, a little more comic booky, but
I mean, through the eyes of a teenager, yeah,
right, but it's still New York City,
right?
Whereas DC created its own world, and that's, it's a different kind of creativity of creating a world with these different cities that have these different functions, that have these heroes that function within their cities.
Right.
Whereas, I guess, and this was kind of mind-blowing for me to realize, that the reason I latch on to Marvel more is because it feels more real.
Yeah. And I get that. Like, a lot of the Marvel heroes exist within New York City, and that was, like, Stan Lee's whole thing. He's like, I want people to feel like they could see Spider-Man swinging from buildings and things like that, and setting it in reality, it since comic books are supposed to be, in some cases, like, social commentary, I think Marvel, I would have to go through DC's pantheon of comic books, but I think Marvel had always done better making social commentary.
Yeah, I mean, you got a New York Jew at the helm. Like.
Right. So it was always aware of doing that, and setting it in reality makes people listen more.
Right.
Whereas in the DC case, I mean, you have these cities that sort of resemble, like, Metropolis, where Superman exists, is like parts of, there's I think Ontario and Chicago. It was like an amalgam.
Yes, nailed it.
Of that. And like Gotham City, yes, it was like New York, but it was like New York on steroids, like
twisted and dark.
Yeah, like, and it, hell busting through the sidewalk pavement and shit like that.
It's Sunnydale.
Yeah.
It's the Hellmouth.
The Hellmouth, exactly. But, and it's so strange, like, to think about it, because, I mean, it's all made up bullshit.
Right,
so
but it's a
what
very
makes it,
divisive difference.
Yeah.
That if you aren't, like, keenly aware that Batman is a character created to function in his own world.
Yeah.
Which, it's just such a fundamental difference.
Mm-hmm.
It's the difference between Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter.
Right.
Harry Potter is in our world, and I've always been so much more of a Harry Potter fan because it's easier to latch onto.
Yeah.
It's a different style of creativity, it's a different style of fiction than world building.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that one is more impressive than the other, because it takes talent and creativity, obviously, to build your own world from nothing. But I think that it also takes equal talent and creativity to think, what if we twisted this knob in our world? What would happen?
Yeah.
Like, to see, like, different things in different ways. Like,
Yeah.
That was so profound. See different things in different ways.
I know. I mean,
I went to college.
It makes sense. But, yeah, so,
yeah.
Like, Batman as a character has always been interesting to me because of that fantastical element of, like, this dude can do these incredible things just by, like, willpower and, like, determination to make sure that no other little boy loses his parents to some criminal as they were walking down an alley, like, making sure it never happens again. And so this guy who happens to have the means of, like, money and, like, the training is like, I'm gonna be a one-man war on terror, and takes on the entire city of Gotham. And anyone who jeopardizes, like, the lives of the innocent and, like, goes against his belief in justice, he is just gonna punch them in the face and take them to Arkham Asylum.
And, like, I see the light in your eyes and how excited that makes you. It still just sounds so boring to me.
But it's because of how he functions.
Right.
Within those limits. Like,
because the rules are different.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the fact that the character of Batman can see a warehouse full of criminals, sneak up behind a few of them, and since he's so trained and skilled, he can take out their magazine clips and their weapons and change them with blanks so that when he does approach and make himself known, they fire and think that the bullets just fly off of them or go right through them and it doesn't hurt them at all. And it, like, increases that fear that they have in Batman so he can operate better.
And good, like, for Batman.
Yeah, it's just super cool. And, like, that one Batman comic that I do reference frequently, Batman RIP, he has, like, a backup personality in case his mind is compromised by somebody. And it, like, takes away the Bruce Wayne persona where he just becomes completely Batman so that he can fight without any regard for, like, morality and everything like that. And it's, like, super cool. And it's just... And as much as I love, like, Captain America and Spider-Man, because they are fun and it's, like, webhead and, like,
well, but it's, I mean, it's not just the fun part of it. Like, they're, I don't know, I'm more able to latch on to their convictions and the things they're feeling. Like, even as Cap gets darker, like, it just, it always, it feels a little bit more complicated.
I understand. But, again, that's only from your perspective of the films.
Right.
And because Marvel has perfected those films.
Yeah.
With DC doing what it's doing and going off in all these different places.
At the same time.
It clearly doesn't care about it, and that's mainly because of Warner Brothers. Maybe with their DC streaming service, where it's like, I mean, granted, they're probably going to be mostly studio features, but like Teen Titans and Swamp Thing and a bunch of other DC properties. Like, at least it's contained within the DC service, so it's like DC content for DC fans.
Right.
So maybe that's where they'll figure out their shit. But if Warner Brothers has as much at play, like, that's why the new Joker movie with Joaquin Phoenix is not being like, this is a superhero movie about the Joker. This is like a crime drama. Like, that's what they're marketing it as. And it'll be like a solo origin story And it'll probably feel a lot like Logan for the Fox studio, right, because it's like this character study, in-depth piece about who we like seeing on screen, like the Joker or Wolverine. So that might be something cool, but again, it's not going to fix their superhero movie problem.
Right, and I mean, the thing about The Flash, and honestly, like, I haven't seen Supergirl. I watched an episode of Legends of Tomorrow and I was bored, but I don't know any of the background of most of the characters. I watched Arrow for a while, for as long as I could, before I got too tired of how dramatic everything was. But The Flash is the only part of the DC screen cinematic universe that feels like a comic book.
Right.
And from what I've heard, like, whereas Marvel is kind of like, their shows are kind of blah, because a lot of people like them, but they're just, they're darker, they're heavier, they're not as fun. But the DC, like their TV stuff, the CW series, from what I've heard, they're all pretty good.
Yeah.
And they tie together. They do crossovers all the fucking time, which seems unnecessary, but I'm sure is fun for the people that watch all the shows. Like, I do think we should watch Supergirl when we finish The Flash. But
yeah, I mean, I did watch a good portion of it. But I think I moved or just became unavailable or something. But now that it's on Netflix, it'll be easier to watch. It did feel fun in some cases.
Because, I mean, we were talking about this, like, Arrow was, like, the linchpin for this whole, like, CW DC universe. And they started that, you know, knowing what DC stuff had sold before. So they made Oliver Queen a knockoff Batman, which, from what I've heard, is not true to comic book Oliver Queen.
Right.
But by the time they got to The Flash, they had sort of figured out what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And then Supergirl comes on the heels of The Flash.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's every likelihood that it is fun and enjoyable, like The Flash is. I don't think I'll go back to Arrow, but
no, I mean, it doesn't really venture that far from what it started as. Whereas Supergirl and The Flash, like, they get into their grooves, and that's why the crossovers do, like, they pay off if you watch them together, because they're fun shows. But yeah, the DC shows are good, and then their animated movies, which are literally, like, the adaptation of the comic books that they exist from, like, like almost shot for shot. In some cases there are some liberties that they take and some stories that they alter a little bit, but mostly most of them are well received. I think maybe the one with Batman and Harley Quinn, which is like the most recent one, some people didn't like that, and then I can't remember the other one that people had a problem with, but they're mostly hits. There's very few DC animated movies that are misses.
That's good.
Yeah, because
so they got one thing right.
Because they're comic book movies made by comic book creators, and like the people that do the cartooning on that, well, like, just flawless stuff, and they're beautiful to watch. Whereas the movies just can't just get it right.
Happen.
And there are moments you can see in like the Justice League or Batman v Superman that look like comic book panels that I've seen, and I'm like, that's amazing, and where was that this whole time? But then they get convoluted with their plot and like unnecessary scenes and
villains
things like that.
Nobody cares about.
Right. I mean,
Justice League.
Yeah, no, I know. Steppenwolf. Why?
I don't. Nobody knows.
Yeah, and like they're equal to Thanos is Darkseid, which there were elements alluding to Darkseid in Justice League and Batman v Superman, but like the whole rushing process of like getting the team together, and none of it felt earned. Yeah. None of it was put together very particularly well.
No.
Which is a shame, because Ben Affleck has been my favorite Batman, and there's talks of him and Henry Cavill leaving their respective parts.
Right.
So they're going to go with a Supergirl movie instead of a Man of Steel 3.
Or whatever.
2, rather. But I think that's a good place to stop it.
I think so, too.
But I will add, this is some side news that I just learned today. Not DC related. But so Fox has been having trouble with some of their movies that they have, that they are planning to release, like X-Men Dark Phoenix or whatever that is, and like that other movie that's like, we saw the trailer for it. It's about this girl, but it looks like she's an artificially intelligent being, so it's like some the Uncanny Valley type shit. When you see the trailer, you're not really sure what you're looking at. But all of these movies are being like pushed way back into when they're going to be released, which leaves Christmas wide open. So Ryan Reynolds tweeted this photo of Deadpool reading a storybook to Fred Savage, the guy from Wonder Years.
Yeah.
And what that meant was they're re-releasing Deadpool 2 with a PG-13 rating. So they're going to cut it to fit a PG-13 rating and release it for Christmas.
What?
And it's going to be Deadpool reading this illustrated children's book to Fred Savage. And it's going to be have all these PG-13 elements that are like cut into the movie. So that they could have a Christmas release. But also Deadpool 2 just knows their marketing.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
It'll either be really funny or
I think it'll be
train wreck.
Because it's like taking an R movie and cutting it to fit the PG-13 standard. Like, there's a lot that has to be taken out, especially with Deadpool 2. But adding in elements like that, where he's just reading a book to Fred Savage and, like...
It's cute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, it's drawn in crayon, because I presumably Deadpool wrote it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
well, that's
just
cool.
Playing with the character. Yeah, I think it's hilarious, and I can't wait to see it. And, like, when Fox released all those new cover art with Deadpool on their movies, so...
Yeah.
Any Deadpool marketing, I'm all for
all
it.
All about it. Good.
Yeah. So that's been our second episode, or our part two, rather.
Right.
This is our 29th. This will be our 29th episode.
Okay.
Recorded on my birthday.
Aw.
So
Matt Day.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. I've been your host, Matthew, the Dr. Danko.
I'm Hillary Crumb, the co-host.
Yep. What was that thing you did on the last
episode? I don't know. I don't want to talk about it.
Unloading. Once the show ends, please don't shed those tears. We'll come back again, so have no fear. Oh, we told you that it just might end up this way. What's the show called again? You cannot be saying, why didn't I you warn me? Why didn't I you warn me now? Why didn't I you warn me? Why didn't I you warn me? Why didn't I you warn me? Why didn't I you warn me?